Always a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. How are you doing this morning slash afternoon, Mike?
I am doing very well. I really, really appreciate the gong show in the Glades. Like, that sounds like something I would like to talk about. Gong show in the Glades. I played in Tampa 1 year, right? So we go for training camp exhibition game in Fort Myers, Florida. So like trying to grow the game, Tampa, Florida exhibition game. And we, first of all, we take the bus down there. Our air conditioning on the bus doesn't work. It's 1,000 degrees. We're all like sweating out like we're trying to cut weight for boxers. We get to the game. We got nothing left. We look at their roster. They have legit 8 really, really tough players playing against us. And we didn't bring an appropriate kind of roster for that kind of game.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there stretching before the game on the, you know, the red line, whatever. And I see Ray Whitney. I'm like, what? When it goes down, I'm finding you. You're about the only one that I want to talk to when things get out of control. He's like, don't kid yourself, Mike. I was going to come find you, too. I'm like, perfect, perfect.
Sure enough,
we had, I don't know, 14 fights in that game. It was obscene. It was crazy.
Based on the age of the fan base, was it an early bird special, like 4 p.m. start?
Yeah. The good news is all the action was over by about 4:30. We'd have a dozen fights, and they could go on with the rest of their day.
There you go. Good stuff. All right, listen, before we get to the playoffs and your thoughts on some of the off-ice stuff in the NHL, let's start with, I think, the big news for Ottawa Senator fans this morning, and you did the game yesterday between Germany and France, and the hit that Tim Stützle took on the side of his knee, which forced him to leave the game. There's been no update. There was no update from the Germans yesterday. We haven't found anything yet this morning. So you're our boots on the ground man in Helsinki. Have you heard or read anything today as far as an update on the status of Tim Stützle?
I have not, no. I just got to the rink a little while ago, so I haven't kind of really buzzed around. But it was not a dirty hit. It wasn't a violent hit. It was just kind of where bodies got tangled up. And it was like the right side of the body of Timmy's body took the impact of the boards, but as the defender was kind of spinning around, he bumped into the left side of his leg. And you know what it looks like when it could be nothing, could be absolutely nothing, could be a full groin. But the way the guy bumped into the side of his knee, I did not like the way that looked. That was one of those ones where, like, those weird little pop moves where you could tear your MCL or tear your ACL with it. And I'm not saying it's that at all, but I just, it was one of those contacts you're like, oh boy, that can be bad, and I am so hopeful that it is not. I would imagine that they are going to get imaging today and last night and MRIs and everything else to make sure that whatever's going on is 100% okay before he thinks about getting back in the lineup. So I will let you know when I hear, but I imagine it's going to be a little bit. The good news is, if we remember, the training staff for Canada is the medical staff from Ottawa. So he not only has a German group, but he also has a group of guys that he's worked with all year that he trusts, that know his body, to also kind of go through these tests and make sure he's okay. And Pierre Dorion was here yesterday as well, and I imagine he would have been, you know, front and center down around the German dressing room to make sure that Tim is getting well taken care of.
MJ, it's always the wiggle that scares me, but having said that, he had
whiplash
on Suzuki, which I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You kind of got past one. Hey, just thoughts on the overall tournament, kind of how it's felt, and I know it's a massive pool and maybe not quite the same talent level, but what's the vibe around the tournament been like?
People are having a good time, and that's the vibe, right? I think everyone's excited, like all the fans are excited to be back in the building and have every country, whether they're good or bad. You know, they got the fans, they got the flags, they got the face painting, all those different things. Like, that's kind of the vibe that people are excited that it's back. And you're right. I mean, you take Russia out of the tournament, and even Belarus, and you know, you add some teams that are maybe not quite as good. And so there's some lopsided scores. But when those teams play each other, like when Kazakhstan played Italy, yeah, maybe it might not be Stanley Cup final caliber, but it's really important for those teams, right? So you have more games that matter amongst the lower teams as well. So, you know, we're kind of in the meat of it here, so we get through this week, and then it really picks up through the weekend and on into next week. So, and Canada's been good so far. And Pierre-Luc Dubois, if you didn't watch Winnipeg play this year, you could see why he had a career year. You could see why he is a load to play again. He's just a massive, strong hockey player that is kind of having his way with the competition right now. So he's been a standout for Canada.
All right, let's turn our attention to what's going on back over here, and we'll start with maybe getting your thoughts on the elimination of teams on the weekend. We'll start with Toronto, because they're whatever fan or not of the Leafs, they're certainly a high profile team. So What are your thoughts now on Garbage Bag Day in Toronto today on what you saw in the seven-game series and then what you think might happen in the long off season?
So, you know, I don't know if any loss feels better than any other one. I mean, I feel at least in this year they went down playing well. I thought in their loss to Montreal and maybe even against Columbus the two previous years, you know, they wouldn't feel satisfied in how they played, especially when they lost. But the way they play hard. Tampa's a resilient team. You can't really point to the stars and say, you know, Austin Matthews, why didn't he do anything? I think he led the team in points. Mitch Marner was good. It's just so bitterly disappointing that once again, it's almost you'd have to laugh because like the fact you get to an elimination game so many years in a row and never find a way to win. I think this is the frustrating part for the Leafs is that the way they built their team and they have these four forwards and the idea was that they are difference makers and they have been. They've been great in the regular season. But you'd think over 5-6 years, at some point in one of those elimination games, somebody would do something special because they're all special players. Someone will go get a hat trick, and that would be enough to get them through, but it just wasn't meant to be again. So it's brutal. And the hardest part is, given how many times it's happened, there's nothing they can say today to the media all summer that's going to matter at all. There's nothing they can say. All they can just say is, it hurts. It sucks. We tried. We're going to try again next year. And that is going to ring so bitterly hollow to the people saying it as well as the fans. So, you know, I think the sensible thing going forward would probably be, you don't want to try to trade guys away just to trade guys away. If you can improve the team somehow, then I guess you have to look at those things. And I think to improve the team, their best bet would probably be to change the defense. You know, try to bolster the defense somehow, probably with physicality, with defensive defensemen, and try to find some way to do that. And that may cost them a really good player, but I don't think just trading one of the big guys just to trade him is the way to go. And the other easy way is to change the coach. I think Sheldon's a very good coach. I think he's got a great track record. I think the team and him, you know, they understand how each other work. And he guided them to the fourth best record in the league. That's hard to do. So I would be very careful about just changing the coach out just because it's the easiest thing to do. So what am I expecting this summer? Probably more tinkering than anything super significant, even with coaches like Barry Trotz or Pete DeBoer out there and available. I imagine probably digging around the edges as opposed to, you know, firing the coach or trading one of those four forwards or something more significant like that.
MJ, the issue I have or the thought I look at, and I'll go back to Tampa Bay and you're building and it's a process you understand. You get swept by Columbus. It's devastating. But I never felt like there was a downturn in the talent from the Toronto Maple Leafs perspective based on not handling the salary cap very well. And for long enough, Dubas and Shanahan have been there. The drafting and development for having 3,000 scouts hasn't been great. Can you confidently say that they can? Like, I don't think they're going to be able to ice as good a team next year with the increase of salary in Riley, with Mikheyev's situation, with the goaltending situation in flux. Isn't that the frustration that it's going to be pretty? I can't see how they're going to be better next year.
Yeah, 100%. You're right. That would have been the case last year, although they were pretty darn good this year. I would have said, you know, the run with against Montreal when they had Freddie and Jack, and, you know, like they were going to be able to do more, have more, maybe their best team ever. And then they lost to the Canadiens. They might have been talent-wise a fractionally lower, but they certainly played very well this year. But you're right. Like, I don't know what they're going to do in net because you can't have Campbell and Mrazek sign next year. You just can't. Not for that team. So either you got to trade Mrazek or you can't re-sign Campbell. I think they would like to trade Mrazek if they can. And then Mikheyev has played himself off the team because he's been too good. You can't afford to pay him $3 or $4 million, which he's going to earn and deserve. So, yeah, they probably will be a little bit weaker. You talk about draft and development. They traded away so many of their high picks as well. They don't have, you know, all the first-rounders from the last few years that would be ideally stepping into the lineup right now. So you got to hope, Nick Robertson has been around and can do something when he gets the lineup, or Kauppi Niemelä, who they just signed out of Finland, can step in there and be there, or if it's Sandin or Liljegren or whoever. But, yeah, I don't know if they get it. They're still going to be very good. Don't get me wrong. They're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be excellent.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they'll be better than this year. And that if you're at your very best and you still can't get through the first round, we're not even talking about four rounds, Zimmer.
Yeah.
We're talking about the first round, one round. That is frustrating for everybody.
Hmm. Patrice Bergeron, what's your gut tell you? Does he come back and play hockey next? Oh, I think we all think if he's playing, he's going back to Boston. But what's your gut say about Patrice Bergeron?
Very confidently in saying he's not playing anywhere but Boston if he plays at all. So, like, you know, I know the Montreal Canadiens is like, well, Kent Hughes is his agent and he speaks French. And that was, no, he's not going to go play for Montreal. If he plays, he's playing for Boston. My less than confident opinion is I think he's going to retire. I think Patrice has been through so much. His body, he doesn't make much noise about it, but he has been through some injuries. And he has been, you know, a grind. He's put his body through the wear and tear. So I think he probably, I think if I had to guess, I'd be guessing he steps away and retires, which is incredible because he deserves, and I think he will win the Selkie again. He's still playing at an incredibly high level. It's not like he can't do it. He could sign a three-year deal for $25 million if he wanted to. I just think his body has been through so much, and I think he can appreciate he wants quality of life with all his little kids running around for the next 50 years that it might be time.
Do you think Seabass will probably almost do a Jim Carrey on him and you say, listen, one more year. I just want one more year out of you. You come back as the dust settles. Because that's what I agree with you, MJ. And JR said, lean towards. But once you take a month off and you say, listen, just come back for 1 year. Give you a nice salary here. We're going to go all in.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure he'll try. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure he's going to, you know, he'll order some soup in the corner and give him a wave over. Like, come on over, Seabass. And he'll say, one more for sure. And I think there probably would be good advice in the sense that don't file the papers next week.
Yeah.
Even if that's what you think, if that's the way you're leaning, like give your body and your life some time to settle down. Wait until August 1st. See how you're feeling there, mentally, physically, where your family's at, what you guys want to do. They're obviously going to live in Boston. They're still settled in there. And Seabass will tell them, that's Cam Neely people, if he did not know, Cam Neely will tell them, listen, and when you're done playing, you're going to work here as an ambassador, as a president, as an assistant for the rest of your life. Like, you're just been. But we'd like you to play one more year. We'll give you $8 million, and let's try one more time with this group because they're still a good team. As they showed the first round, bowing out to a pretty excellent Carolina team. But I also think that Patrice Bergeron is his own guy enough that even Cam Neely, as persuasive as he might try to be, if he's made his mind up, he's just going to go with what he wants to do.
On the surface, all four of these second-round playoff series look like really great matchups. Which one do you believe will end up being the best series, just from a competitive point of view?
Competitive-wise, I mean, I think Florida-Tampa, given what happened last year. I'm leery with Braden White being hurt, but just the energy and the physicality and the mayhem of last year makes me want to watch that one the most. I'm worried about injuries and Tampa kind of getting worn down here, but I want to see that one because I think it's going to be kind of wild and woolly like last year's was. As far as competitive goes, probably Calgary-Edmonton, amazingly enough. Like they split the season series. They're both playing well. Mike Smith can play as well as he did in the first round. Edmonton is basically a toss-up, and I want to see what Connor McDavid can do when Connor McDavid is playing at a level that is heads and tails the best in the world right now, like only he can. I think that one is probably going to go long, probably going to go seven, and be very tight.
How much, if Chris Tanev ends up being injured, he didn't play in Game 7 versus Dallas, because I think he's one of the elite shutdown defensemen in the NHL. If he can't play for Calgary, against McDavid specifically, how much of an issue is that?
Very, very significant. People would think, oh, well, Chris Tanev, no, Chris Tanev, you're right. And he's been the last couple of years one of the best defensive defensemen. Calgary's one of the best defensive teams, in large part because they have a top four that they can trust so reliably to play the system and get the job done against every kind of opposition. And now, obviously, Connor's going to do things occasionally where nobody's going to stop him. But I'd take Chris Tanev over anybody else on that team to try to. So I don't even know what the bigger one is. If Chris Tanev can't play versus Leon Draisaitl being whatever, 70% healthy, both are hugely significant parts of their team, and Draisaitl is gutting it out, playing a lot, but he's obviously not right either. But Tanev, make no mistake, is a significant. The fact that he didn't play Game 7 tells you that he's really hurt, right? Like, he's not a guy that's going to pull himself out of the lineup if there's any way that he could get through a game, and he obviously was injured enough that he could not.
I was so impressed watching Carolina lock it down. I mean, their own zone, I don't think anybody makes better puck decisions, manages the puck better, Do you think there's a chance in that series that if the goaltending is there, that they could just literally pick the New York Rangers apart?
Well, the Rangers were absolutely crushed by Pittsburgh, right? Yeah. Like, dominated 5-on-5. Shot shares, expected goals, chances, you name it. And Louis Domingue, you know, wasn't quite able to get it done. Crosby was injured. Shesterkin got really hot at the end. Yes, I think that could be a problem. If Bronta is good somewhere near Shesterkin, or Shesterkin is not otherworldly, because Carolina does a lot of the stuff that Pittsburgh does, but better, faster, more of it. Yeah, I think that one, it could feel, the games could feel lopsided. I'm sure the Rangers will find a way to win one or two or whatever, but the games could feel lopsided, like many of the Pittsburgh games were as well.
Yeah. Thoughts on Pete DeBoer being fired, and would the obvious be Barry Trotz?
Yeah, so we're trying to, you know, we do this all the time, right? Coaches become available, you start doing like the match game. Pete DeBoer, well, listen, Vegas, it's hard when they had as many injuries as they did, but I will say this, the special teams were not great. The goaltending dysfunction, he has to take some ownership of because he's the head coach. And the fact that they missed the playoffs, regardless of all the injuries, you know, he has to carry some of that. He knew going in, given that Vegas is very aggressive, that they would not tolerate for any reason kind of any kind of underachieving season. So he probably shouldn't be surprised. Barry Trotz would help them for sure. If Barry Trotz wants to try to take that on, I think Barry Trotz would be great for any team. So I wonder if Barry Trotz goes to Vegas, and I'm like, where's Pete DeBoer going? A lot of people are saying Toronto. I don't know. He's actually from Windsor. Windsor's very close to Detroit. You know, maybe it's Detroit, the landing spot for Pete DeBoer. You start trying to move the pieces around the board, and you wonder if that doesn't, you know, the first domino, I think, is Trotz, wherever he goes, whether it's Winnipeg or whether it's Vegas or wherever. DeBoer might be the next guy to go, and I wonder if Detroit might be interested in his services.
All right. Well, you got some TV work. You have the highly anticipated Italy-Denmark game coming up next hour on TSN. I'm just about to go on my phone app. Give me the early line on Italy versus Denmark.
Oh, I got it. Denmark's got to be favored by 3.5.
Okay.
The over-under's got to be 6.5.
Okay.
Nick Ehlers is going to have a field day out here because he's playing at warp speed and everyone else kind of can't quite get up to his pace. So I expect a big game out of him. I'm going to say 5 or 6-2 for Denmark.
Okay.
We'll see how wide I am next week.
All right. Yeah, that sounds good. All right. You and Gord will have the call next hour on TSN. Appreciate the time, Mike. Thanks a lot.
All right. Talk to you a couple days.